everyone. Welcome to Writer's House. Hope you are all safe and well. Today, we've got a fun one. We're going to talk about Aston Villa, Inter Miami, and some football rule changes. And my guests are Mr. Ryan Unn and my dear friend and guest. I've been longing to get him on for so long. ESPN analyst and Aston Villa super fan, Luis Miguel Echegaray.
My man, you said it like a Peruvian. Unbelievable how well you said my, better than my, it took my wife 2 years to say that. You said it in 5 minutes.
Echegaray.
Right? Ah, muy bien, bien. Yes, righty.
How are you, my friend?
I'm good, brother. I'm so humble to be here.
No, I'm so pleased to have you on, man. Just your energy alone, my friend. But no. Again, as well, you know, to get you on, right, to get him on at the time where Aston Villa, man. You know something? Tell us about how your Aston Villa supporting came from. Tell us where it came from.
Yeah, no, it's a funny story, a unique story, I guess. And I'm very proud to talk about it, really, because it's also what we were talking about before we started taping, how this game of ours is about community, essentially, mm-hmm. right? So I'm Peruvian. I left Peru when I was 11, 12 in the early 90s. Mm. Peru was going through political turmoil. So we moved to England and my dad and mom were like, we're moving to England. And I was like, why are we moving to England? Oh, you were born there. I was like, I had no idea.
I was born
in England.
Wow.
Yeah. But I had no idea. My entire family's Peruvian, grew up in Peru. And then at 11, 12 years old, my parents said, look, Peru's a bit rough right now. Let's need to go to England. And they surprised me saying, yeah, you got a British passport. And I was like, oh. So we moved to England. We moved to South London first and then Surrey.
Right.
And I knew no English. I knew English, but it was very broken.
Right.
And it was very difficult for me to acclimate. Peruvian culture and English culture. I couldn't eat anything, righty. The food here was terrible. Right? It was awful, right? The climate, everything was just weird.
Wow.
But I love football and I wanted a team. I couldn't connect with anything around me. I lived in a neighborhood where half of the people were Greek, half were Turkish. Turkish people thought I was Greek. The Greeks thought I was Turkish. And I was like, I'm Peruvian. And they were like, we don't know what that means. And I couldn't connect until I made my first best friend,
right?
This kid called Mark, who was an Aston Villa
fan. Wow.
He took me to his house. I opened the door and there's the king, Dalian Atkinson, Dean Saunders. And I fell in love with the claret and blue. Aston Villa had a bit of a Spanish twang to it. My dad would call it Aston Villa. For a while.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, and we couldn't afford to go, but his family would take me to Villa Park for every home game from the South. And ever since then, like, I began to build this connection with the club, and it's been my lifelong plan forever.
How old were you when you first saw the claret and blue?
Probably
the villains.
12, 13 years old, wow. 13. I think it was like one season into the debut of the Premier League. You know, Villa came second in the very first one, you know. And it was, I mean, I walk in, I see Villa Park and I was like, this is my home.
It's amazing, Villa Park.
Yeah, but
man,
Villa, this is what you're hoping. This is why, you know, even with the FA Cup going to the semi-finals, it kills it, man. Because
how good if Coventry Man United was at Villa Park?
You know what? You probably give them an even better chance for some reason.
I miss
Villa Park.
I miss Sheffield Villa Park semi-finals. Well.
It's a proper ground, and it's what we like to.
Can you remember the first time you walked in?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, when you go towards Villa, like, it's a walk. It's not like you get out of the tube or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to walk a little bit. There's like nothing much about it. Bodymore Heath is close by, but not really. And then, you know, you see the McGregor statue, you know, the founding member of the FA, who's a villain. And then you see the stadium. So from outside, it looks like a prototypical English stadium. But I'm coming from Peru, right? Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm talking about used to seeing Alianza Lima and Cubillas and, like, you know, a completely different kind of culture. Mm. And I see this stadium. And at first, it's really about the people congregating outside of it. It's when you go in and you see the whole tent and it's packed. And it's my first experience in the Premier League, seeing English fans as a Peruvian. And I think I remember just not saying much because I was just like overwhelmed. And I wasn't with my family. I was with you know, friends or whatever. So I was just like overwhelmed by it all. And then little by little, you know, as more players came in and different, Dwight York is my hero.
Is he your main guy?
Yeah, he's my hero growing up. I mean, I've got others like Juan Pablo Angel, the Colombian when he came, of course. Norberto Solano, the first Peruvian that ever played in the Premier League, who first went to Newcastle but went to Villa. But Dwight York growing up, like when he left for United, like I cried.
Was
like,
devastated.
Yeah.
So after seeing the claret and blue for the first time, falling in love with Villa, how does it feel now being at ESPN and getting to sit down, you know, on a, well, chatting to people like Unai Emery, who is now,
I mean, listen, I gotta tell you something. First of all, ESPN always, you know, they're so good to me, and I'm, you know, I love being there. Mm. And they're always very careful and make each other, because they understand my love for the Villa. So I'm very, you know, careful about making sure that I'm not completely biased or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, what Villa's going through, and we're going to talk about in a second, you know, has been probably the most exciting time since I've been a fan. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there were some great moments back in the day, Brian Little and the John Gregory years.
Yeah, Peter Whiff and all them guys.
Back when you were playing and stuff. Like, I love those moments. But to see Unai Emery, especially somebody who is not English, has gone through a lot of challenges and successes, still learning the language, and meeting him, because he is a decent human being before anything else. He is such a great gentleman. Like, you know, we had an interview, and at the very beginning, we wanted to get straight into it. Like, you know, chances for the Champions League, how well we're doing, etc. The first thing he wanted to do was know about me.
Yes. Mm.
It was a 10-15 minute conversation about it, till the producers were like, all right, we need to talk about other stuff.
So,
you know, to meet Unai Emery and to, you know, we can definitely have a conversation about the tactics and the strategies and things he had to deal with at Arsenal and PSG and the accolades that he won in Spain. But as a person, he loves this sport. He's committed to the craft. Mm. And that's actually more unique than ever in this day and age. So it was a pleasure.
So when he got the job, when he was getting the job, was you instantly like, yes.
Yes, I was happy.
That's the guy.
Yeah, because people need to understand. Look at his resume, for crying out loud. Like, there is, you know, what he's done with, you know, the fact that he's won multiple titles, Europa League titles. Mm-hmm. What he did with Villarreal, people forget that was remarkable to get them to a semi-final spot. What he did with Sevilla, PSG. And whenever you think about everything that he has achieved, the moment he joined Villa, like, he became the most winningest manager to arrive as a manager. Mm-hmm. Like, we can talk about, you know, the previous accolades, specifically back in the day in the 1982 European Cup. But in terms of the Premier League era, he became the most successful manager to enter. And he comes with a pedigree. Mm. And unfortunately, the cloud of, yes, but what did he do at Arsenal, whatever.
Different scenario.
It's a different scenario. Yeah. And we can even get into that as well. But I became very excited when he came in.
Yes.
Like, he's a man that breathes this game 24/7, you can see the difference.
Meticulous, like, in his preparation, and you know, the players he's got, and the players that have improved as well. You know what's really, really what I really love about him, and everybody gets it. Everybody has the same problems in the league, is injuries, and with him, he's made a stance on not saying anything about injuries, not making it an excuse. Because you know what I think of that as well, Rai? I think that he's trying to make the players themselves realize, listen, we're going to do this. And of course you get injuries, but we don't want to say, oh, it kind of gives you already, Louis, it gives you an excuse. Yeah, but if we had them, because no one's expecting Villa to be where they are. As we speak now, Villa should qualify for the Champions League if they carry on doing what
they're doing.
Where's a piece of wood? But what I'm saying is, the way they've played for the whole of this season, and we've seen Spurs again, even the other, look at that 3-0 at Fulham, bam, just out of the blue.
Mm. Yeah, after beating Villa.
Unbelievable.
4-0, was it 4-0?
Unbelievable.
They went from their best performance to their worst performance.
If I'm in a Villa camp and I see that, that's almost going to buoy me a bit more, simply because I'm saying, listen, see what they've done to us, but then look what Fulham done to them. We are in the seat. Let's go, man. Let's do it.
Yeah, just keep trucking along.
Depending on Ollie Watkins, if they could keep Ollie Watkins fit,
mate,
that's the problem.
I mean, listen, Ollie Watkins, I hope after every single game he goes home and his missus puts him in bubble wrap, because he is so important. And the season that he has had, I mean, he deserves you know, the call to be nominated for Player of the Season because of what he's done. Yes, we could talk about Phil Foden as well and other players, but I think what Ollie Watkins has done, because if you look at his stats, it's not just goals, it's the creativity, the assists that he's made. He's fantastic. But the point that you just made right here, I think people need to understand two things. Number one, Unai Emery has not even been here for two seasons.
Mm, that's wild.
It's ridiculous. And number two, there's been two ACL injuries, Tyrone Mings and Emiliano Wendia, from day one. Not like a season into it. Tyrone Mings got hurt the first game of the season. Emiliano Wendia hasn't played a single minute. And then our best midfielder, Bubba Kamara, got hurt on an ACL. Jacob Ramsey has not played that much. Matty Cash has gotten injured. Lucas Dina, of course. Like, we've had literally one striker until just recently when Yonhader Duran, the Colombian striker, who's Ollie Watkins' backup, he just came back. And not one single word from Unai Emery. Yeah. No excuses.
I love
that. We're just going to keep going and going and going.
Do you think? What do you think? Do you think they can? You think they can do it when you look at their running? Right. What's their running? Let's have a look at Villa's running.
Well, I know that. Here's the thing: Tottenham and Villa have to play Arsenal, City, and Liverpool.
Yeah, the derby next.
We have to play Wolves next.
That's tough in itself.
Then away to City,
which is very scary.
Home to Brentford. Lille in the Conference League. Goes to Arsenal. The second leg of Lille. Bournemouth at home.
But you know the thing with Unai as well is that because he's in that European tournament, he's probably going to go for that. He's going to try and win
a trophy. His first press conference was, I won Champions League football for Aston Villa, but I won a trophy.
But this was one of the most important things he did at Villarreal when he went there as well, was just like win them their first European trophy. And then, you know, got them into Champions League, and then the league form kind of suffered, but it didn't really matter because he went there and did something. But you mentioned Spurs before. I think the really interesting thing about the Premier League this season is that I don't think a huge amount of people at the beginning of the season would have put Villa and Spurs fourth or fifth in any order.
No way.
And I think it's really, if you look at some of the other teams that have been struggling in the league who, you know, we've talked about before, I think it's really encouraging for the Premier League to see a kind of variation of teams getting into those Champions League spots. Mm. Do you think it's sustainable? Because,
because you see what happened with Newcastle. You've seen Newcastle.
Yeah, but I feel the Premier League is getting to an interesting point where you maybe have two or three, four teams who should, in quotation marks, finish in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. But it's not becoming quite as predictable as it has been in, you know, remember when it was like the same top four every year?
Well, Chelsea and Man United are supposed to be up there, if we're going to be totally honest, if we're talking at them two just in...
especially the billions that Chelsea has spent. But it's a good question, right? Because I think that the problem is, and the challenge from a Villa perspective, is that we have to meet those targets. Because things become a little bit more complicated if we don't. Now, you said something earlier, righty, which is completely true. Not only did anybody expect us to go this high so far fourth, but like a sort of top seven is really the objective. Yeah. And Unai Emery has said it throughout the entire season. He's saying there's seven teams better than us. And I know what he's doing. It's a psychological uplift for his team at the same time as being realistic. But from my financial perspective, you know, we have to bring in revenue. Mm. I mean, Villa have now a new deal with Adidas, so that will help as well. But in terms of getting a Champions League spot, winning a European trophy, maintaining at the very least the squad that we want is going to be very, very important. But it's going to be key, specifically because of the continued upgrades of the profit and sustainability rule from the Premier League as well.
It's coming for everyone, man.
Bro, can I just say...
Forest got points deducted, but we're not going to talk about it because they might get them back.
Yeah.
We just don't know.
We don't know what's going to happen.
We don't know what's going to happen.
Leicester... Can there be a scenario where the season finishes and after the season someone gets relegated, but like in the like a month later?
I don't know.
Well, we don't know when the City thing is going to happen. I mean, it's crazy.
Can you imagine that? We've done it now, and the appeal didn't work, and so you're going to have to come back. I'm sorry, you're relegated.
Well, the biggest criticism right now, and we don't have to go deep in here, but the biggest criticism right now has been the timing of these announcements, right?
Yes.
Like the Leicester City thing, like, you know, we're already more than half into the season. It's crazy.
Yeah. Going back to Villa, we were talking about Champions League and stuff. Okay. So getting into this position now this year, I personally don't think it would be, but if Villa don't finish in the top four,
right,
would it be not classed as a failure, but would it kind of impact what happens next season in terms of how much goodwill Unai Emery gets?
Because I don't
English
think
football
it
fans,
yeah,
I don't famous think for their patience, yeah. obviously. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think Unai will want to get into the Champions League now and do a Newcastle and then you kind of like fall away. I know Newcastle had their injuries as well and form whatever, but I get the impression that Unai is not the guy to get fourth and then it all falls away. Mm.
What do you think? It's not going to be classed as a fake. Is it going to be classed as a fake?
Well, I see this question as a series of doors. Oh, and there's like a person in front of this door saying to you, here's option A, here's option B, here's option C. Option A, you don't get a Champions League spot, but you win the Conference League. Mm. You win a trophy. What would a Villa fan think of that? You come sixth, like maybe Europa, you know, you get Europa League because you win the Conference League, so you're good to go. Option B is, you get a Champions League spot, but you don't win a trophy. But to your point, like you're climbing up, and it's a good testament of what you can do for next season. Or option C, none of that happens. You win Conference League.
Option D, both because
or both of them happen.
Could get five. Could get five.
Exactly.
Could get five. Could get
five. Fifth could very well be a situation. Now, I'm telling you right now, I can't speak for every Villa fan, but I would rather win a trophy. I want Champions League football. Mm. But when I look 15 years from now, 20 years from now, and I look back, I mean, I can't remember right top of my head the position that we ended 7, 8, 9 years ago, but I can tell you the last time we won a trophy, exactly. 1996.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, like, to me, that's really important. But to your point, if fifth becomes available, then that becomes an option. But I think this is why Unai Emery keeps saying, there's 7 teams better than us. Let's all be realistic here. Like, we've had multiple injuries.
Do you think he's saying that? So if it does fall off, you could say, well, listen, we are overachieving.
Correct. We are overachieving right now.
Just hammered Ajax.
Hammered them. Yeah, but you say you're overachieving,
two European giants facing off in that tour.
But I want to remind everybody of the injuries this club has had. Yeah. It's remarkable what we keep doing. I want Champions League football. I want a trophy. I want it all, but it might not happen, right? So I think that everybody needs to be confident of, every Villa fan needs to be confident of the very fact we have the best possible manager taking care of this club and the best possible support system taking care of this
club.
You
know what's as well, right? In respects of the players, like you look at Leon Bailey, unfortunately now he's...
My God, what a player.
He's been unbelievable. Obviously, Ollie Watkins has gone to the top Premier League striker level now. He's there. He's that guy. You know what I mean? And this is, again, you have to say, you hope that that doesn't dwindle off his goal scoring or he gets injured. But if you look at Villa, the team that they can put out, I think they're going to make it. I think they're going to make top four.
I think whether they do or they don't. I think they'll do fifth at least. I've got a feeling that that might be enough.
Fifth could be enough.
Yeah. I'm thinking like they go for fourth and then fifth could be the safety.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
sure.
what they've got to
but
do.
I'm with Luis Miguel in the sense that like the importance of that trophy, he did it at Villarreal. Going to Villarreal after Arsenal was kind of seen as a bit of a like, ooh, is this the, you know, and he went there, got the trophy.
Kind of got his, yeah.
And then kind of, you know, not back the Newcastle gig that everyone kind of forgets about.
He turned it down.
Yeah. And then takes the Villa gig. I think that the thing that I think Unai Emery and Villa is a perfect case of is how underestimated fit is in terms of modern football management. Mm. Everyone's kind of expecting anyone to come into any club, do the business, and like if it doesn't happen, it's like fraud, failure, X, Y, Z. And the importance of manager and club in terms of like fitting, Unai Emery and Villa just seem like perfect.
Yeah, spot on. Yeah.
And even if they don't, even if, say they finish sixth and they don't win the Conference League, to me, it would still be...
That's a success.
That's totally success.
Doesn't it feel like... It will feel like you're so close and because you've done so well up to that point.
It's a disappointment, how quickly do you get over that? But it's a disappointment because... At the beginning of the season, we expected something, and now it's become a superseded expectation.
Right.
That if we don't get it, yes, obviously it's a disappointment.
Come so close,
but sixth with this team with so many injuries, Unai Emery hasn't even been the manager for 2 seasons.
Yeah.
Sixth, when Chelsea are spending more than $1 billion, when Manchester United are still struggling, sixth, like that's remarkable. When everybody was going on about Roberto De Zerbi and Brian, sixth, like that's amazing.
That's some kind of Premier League mid. Table to upper mid table, like shade. Going on there. Where's the De Zerbi chat now?
I love De Zerbi, by the way.
Me too. Nice. But no, it's true. Like, yeah, I think it's amazing for Villa.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
It's exciting.
It is.
I'm pleased to see, because obviously the Villa fans, bro, don't get on this. Don't get on the bad side of Villa fans.
But don't ever get in the way of a Brum.
The thing
right?
with them is that I love the fact that they would continually let people know about this club, what their history is. I think Forest try and do the same thing, but Villa are far more vociferous in there. We yeah. are a European champion
what
team,
What was it
bro.
Like when you played at Villa Park?
No, Villa Park was always amazing. I've always got a lot of stick at Villa Park.
Yeah.
The whole end.
I think I was
but
one
we Yeah, we was all right.
Right.
Let me see. What was it?
Right.
I think
in Spanish.
Yes. What was it? I think Dwight York's team a couple of times gave us a little bit of a hiding. I think Gareth Southgate might have been playing. So
was that in the day of the lace?
I'm not sure.
The Laces shirt.
Probably was, yeah.
Yeah,
probably was the
Dwight
lace
York,
shirt.
When he came to Villa, he got transformed into a striker.
Mm.
And then, you know, during the, you know, and then when Brian Little and John Gregory those years, yeah. you know, and then Ian Taylor, like, you know. Yeah.
But the thing with Dwight, I always saw him as, you know what, he's the perfect hybrid. So he's kind of like a Teddy Sheringham, Andy Cole. Mm. He had the capabilities of both of those players. You know what I mean? In fact, he's very underrated in respects of his pace. He's quick. His touch coming in and linking play and passing through. And he's finishing. Mm. You know, he tap-ins, he can know chips, he can do everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So again, he was one of those players that, those players elevate your team. This is what I'm hoping that will happen with Ollie Watkins for Villa. So you've got the striker, like Leicester had with Vardy, that takes the team to another place because they will score those goals.
There is no better striker in the Premier League who presses the opposing defenders and makes you intoxicated better than Ollie Watkins. And that's why in many ways Villa fans have a little bit of resentment towards our former captain, Gareth Southgate, England manager, because yes, Harry Kane is obviously your leading man, but when you have somebody who's just, especially in a competition, in a tournament like the Euros or the World Cup, when you have somebody that's just going to give you 110% pressed, you are the first defender and he will run until the 91st minute. And that's an important part of it. And he scores goals. Like, it's ridiculous.
The thing is, you don't want him to now, because I'm hearing that is Harry out?
Is that?
I'm here. One second. I'm just hearing
his hand. Just sorry. Yeah,
I'm just hearing.
The sources are just telling me
that he might play in both games. I'm not sure.
Harry Kane or Ollie Watkins?
No, Ollie Watkins.
Oh, well, there you go.
You know, a source, not a reliable source. You know,
ITK. Yeah, right.
He was hearing something.
Yeah, but you know
what level though? What level?
We're at the stage of the season where, if I'm going to be totally honest. Of course, you know, Harry Kane needs to be, you know what I mean? If this is the kind of game where, does Harry Kane even need to play? But then Villa and where Villa are at the moment.
Yeah, we don't want him to play two internationals in March, right?
Exactly. But then the thing with Ollie Watkins, you don't want Ollie Watkins to go into England games trying to impress.
No.
And
no,
overextend himself and get injured or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
These are the things that would worry me now if I'm Villa manager. You cannot get Ollie Watkins injured at this stage. Yeah, that's a big one.
Preach on the microphone with that.
No microphone. Yes, no injuries, please.
No injuries.
No injuries this season. Gosh. I hate that.
You know?
Good times for Villa.
Yes.
Very good times.
Very good times for Villa.
We should get Luis Miguel back on at the end of the season just to check in, no matter what happens with Villa.
If I'm crying or if I'm drunk.
No, you have to come, Lulu, because I want to see where Villa. I think they can do the fourth. I think they'll chat.
Are we locking that in? Is that official?
I'm locking for
can
me.
Can we win Conference League?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
With Unai. You know, but I believe that they'll get that and they'll win Conference League.
Oh, mate. I'm coming anytime you want,
Righty.
Whatever you need, I'll be here. If that's
beautiful.
If that's the prognosis, I'm with you all the way.
Beautiful.
Up the Villa. That's the first thing Unai said to me at the end.
Up the Villa.
In that very quintessential Basque Spanish accent. Up the Villa. Yeah.
Should go stateside.
Yes, bro. Let's go to Inter Miami.
Well, first of all, before we go to Inter Miami, can we talk about James Harden and Kawhi Leonard the other day? We're doing some NBA.
He's trying to block his own guy.
So the Clippers,
Third
quarter, Clippers. We're talking some NBA on Writer's House is incredible. But you know, seeing as Luis Miguel is here, it's like, you know,
let's do it, man.
So Clippers are 21 points up against the Blazers in the third quarter, and Harden kicks it to Kawhi and then kind of like does a semicircle to go out and just contests the shot. Kawhi misses the three and kind of just puts his arm up. He's looking, he's like, what
are you doing? What are you doing?
And we were thinking like, but, so afterwards, James Harden, because at first it got memed, obviously, went everywhere. And everyone was just like, what the fuck is this guy doing? But it turns out he was just like, oh, you know, we were 21 points up in the third quarter. I just wanted to have, you know, put some fun into this locker room kind of thing.
I love that.
You know the vibe I got of it? I know it's a long time ago, but it was like George Best and Rodney Marsh. Did you ever see the clips when they were playing a game? And because they was like so entertaining for Fulham, I don't know who they were playing, but like they were tackling each other on the same team. It's something you got to look for, that kind of clip, right?
Yeah. Well, well, George Best. I told Rye about this, and I think we showed it to you, right? A few years ago, Colombia was playing Argentina, and
yes,
and Colombia gets the ball, and I forgot the actual player, but James Rodriguez was right behind him, and for some reason James Rodriguez was like, nah, I'm gonna tackle you. But the funniest part about that is James Rodriguez tackles his own teammate. Colombia get the free kick.
They got a free kick.
He like pushes him into an Argentina player from the back, and the ref gives a free kick. To be honest, I was saying as well though, this kind of happened in pretty much all of the first leg in Porto for the Arsenal game, where Porto players were stepping on each other's toes and the ref was giving free kicks.
Jesus, well, listen, Christ, any so game with Pepe is possible.
Right? Oh, listen,
you know, but can I just
I
say
love,
quickly
love Pepe,
on Pepe in those two games? Outstanding. Oh,
incredible.
Outstanding.
Especially the
Still
second leg, I think.
Yeah. Outstanding.
41
really
years old, right?
Really,
my God,
really
I'm going to go
good
jogging after.
Yeah.
Someone who's not quite as old yet, but still doing it in MLS, which you cover a lot of at ESPN.
Yep.
Leo Messi.
We're in
season two now.
Season two.
How's it going over
there? Yeah, what's going on, bro? Because like, I saw Suarez score a goal the other day.
Yeah. Inter Miami is very much in getting the band back together mode, right?
Yeah.
They're gonna
Jordi Alba.
Pinto's gonna come in as backup keeper soon.
Carles Puyol. Yeah. Maybe Joan Laporta will come in as director. Yeah, it'll be just like whatever.
It's turning into Barcelona, but like, what's happening out there, man? Because like, where, obviously, with Messi and everything that happened, it went crazy. It was like a film when it was amazing. So where are we now in respect of the hype and what's going on? Because I saw when they went on their tour, Messi didn't play. There was boos to Beckham and all this stuff.
Yeah.
What's going on in America?
Yeah, what's going on? As you rightly mentioned, when they arrived, when Messi arrived last summer, it was insanity. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky enough to cover it for ESPN and ESPN Deportes, even got the one-on-one with the GOAT himself. Mm. And it was this incredible bolt of lightning, Jesus, that arrived to a league that was already growing before Messi. And now with Messi, it's ridiculous. They win the League's Cup trophy, which is their first ever trophy for Inter Miami. So a lot of expectations happen. Now, this season, let's go back to the tour that you talked about. I think Inter Miami shot themselves in the foot a little bit here. It wasn't because when you have Messi and you've just welcomed Lucho Suarez, you know, and obviously Busquets is there, Jordi Alba, there's this, you know, like energy and hype about it. Inter Miami wanted to, you know, take advantage of the situation, rightly so, go on a cool tour and go to play Ronaldo's Al Nassr, go to China, go to, you know, Hong Kong. It was a ridiculous continental tour in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, the schedule was
bizarre. You can't ask that of a 36-year-old Lionel Messi or a 37-year-old Luis Suarez. So, like, he was hurt. He couldn't play everything, and it wasn't his fault. It wasn't the team's fault. It wasn't Tata Martino, the head coach's fault, I think. So I think they bit more than they could chew in this situation. The season begins, though, and so far they're doing well. Messi's hurt because for a very long time he's had a muscle injury at the lower part of his leg. So it kind of inflames every now and again. And that's what's happening right now. But Luis Suarez is joint leading scorer in the league right now. They just beat also Nashville in the Champions Cup, which is the CONCACAF version of the Champions League. So they're doing okay. Every time I get asked this, when it was the preview of Inter Miami and MLS, can they win MLS? Yes, of course they can. But the most important thing is that Inter Miami, and it's funny that we've been talking NBA, Tata Martino has to treat this team like an NBA team. He has to balance the minutes of Messi, Suarez, because when they played against LAFC, Suarez was awful. And everybody was like, you know, his knees are not good.
Did he play a couple of games before that or something?
And it was, the LAFC game was already into the season. So we already saw him do some things, but Suarez can't give you two games in the space of 5 days and deliver. So they have to balance minutes. Here's one for you. Federico Redondo is now a player for them. The son of Fernando Redondo, one of the best ever players.
Moussa somewhere has just gone, whoa, hang on, someone just mentioned Redondo. Where's the Redondo mention?
He loves him, right? He's one of my favorite players, Fernando Redondo. So it makes me feel like very old to know that his son, Federico Redondo, is now essentially the backup of Messi for Inter Miami. So they have a team, they can totally do it, but you have to balance those minutes.
And so what about the vibe, like you mentioned, it was insane.
Have you ever been to Miami?
I've been to Miami, yeah.
So Miami is 70% plus Latino.
Yeah.
It is a party, 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 but it's also a celebration of the Spanish-speaking community. When I asked Messi, like, I've never seen you happier last summer. And he's like, I am, because my family's here. Mm. He doesn't speak English. So, like, to him, he's the closest he'll get to being in Argentina again. So Miami is still an absolute vibe. They have a new stadium coming in a few years. But for now, they're in Fort Lauderdale, which is about 50 minutes north of Miami. Mm. But it's packed. Obviously, when Messi plays, it's going to be a celebration. So now it's about expectations. What can you do? And yes, I think if they don't win something, it will be a failure because Messi's there to make it happen.
And they're still getting all the big stars still coming to all the games.
Yeah, I mean, every time there's a big game, you are guaranteed to see somebody there, from Drake to, you know, LeBron. I remember that his debut was ridiculous.
Oh my God, it was who?
Messi comes out of the tunnel and he's high-fiving Kim Kardashian's son. Like, the game finishes and he's taking a selfie with LeBron. Mm. Serena Williams is there. It's an absolute, and it's so, you know, me being Latino, like, before every kickoff, Gloria Estefan plays around the stadium.
Wow.
And everybody, and Bad Bunny comes on. The vibes are just ridiculous. So I love that. And I want that to be a continuous thing. But this league will exist before and after Messi.
Yeah, so, for sure.
And, so, you know, it's important to understand that. And the fact that it's happening when the World Cup comes in 2026, it's a big deal. So it's exciting.
His boys were in MLS. You know what I mean? You don't have to sell MLS
100%.
To us.
Hey, your boy's doing very well with Apple, by the way.
Brad's doing okay now.
Yeah, he's doing good. He's doing good. I think I interviewed him a few years ago. Yeah.
You know, I was going to just say, just quickly on the rest of the teams, how do the rest of the teams feel about what's happening with Miami? Are they happy for it? Are fans happy for
it? No, they want to play the villain. Like, they don't like this. They want to play the villain and they want to make sure that they kind of dampen the mood. But I think that's...
Is it Montreal the only team that beat him this season so far, right?
Right, Montreal won.
Yeah.
And Montreal actually are doing really well. Mm. Like, it's a good result for them. But there's many teams out there that have their own agenda saying, no, like, Messi what? Like, listen, Dean Smith... He's the Charlotte FC manager. They don't need Messi. They pack that house in North Carolina. Christ.
Phil Neville at Timbers as well. Getting revenge on his old club. They've been me off and got Messi.
You've been to LAFC's game? It's absolutely insane. Like, you know, LA has a massive Mexican-American community and they pack the house. Like, it's crazy.
LAFC, fun fact, they did a load of field trips to like the Bundesliga and other places in Europe to like study ultra culture. And
Seriously?
Basically built like, because that their home end is very much like kind of like it, very close to European ultra.
And it's in downtown LA where it's a big Mexican American community and they just go nuts. And I tell you, reportedly, if Olivier Giroud goes to LAFC,
it's over.
The beautiful one.
Vince LA Carter. And Giroud in LA, it's over.
The Vince Carter gift. It's over.
You said that Olivier would go over there and he'd just be like a normal guy.
Yeah, he'd be blended and everyone's just like, who's that guy?
We're going to see him in the reality show after that. Like,
can I ask you a couple? Because there has been when Messi went last season and ticket prices like hiked massively.
Yeah.
Has that trend kind of leveled out now? Is it still very much like the NBA in the sense that like when the stars come to town, it really, really goes up?
Because
there was the Messi thing, obviously for the league, was great globally, but there were lots of reports of fans who were seeing their ticket prices go up just because Messi was coming through. Or
it's a shame. And I remember talking to the MLS commissioner, Don Garber, about it. And essentially the answer was like, it really is up to these clubs to make sure that, and that includes Inter Miami. Mm. And the secondary market has obviously been a massive factor in this, selling tickets to see Messi for thousands when you could have seen it for less, which is not great, right? Because you want a fan, a regular fan. And again, I remember talking to Inter Miami fans and they were like, look, there's going to be Inter Miami after Messi. So you got to be good to us. Like, and they're right. Like, you can't expect that. And if Messi goes to Sporting Kansas City or Philadelphia Union, like, you got to make sure that you treat the fans the right way. Yeah. Because, you know, this is still a very young league. It's a baby league, only created in the 90s. So, like, they're still trying to identify themselves. But you can't, just because it's Messi, and I understand that demand is going to be big, but they should learn the lesson from the tour, right? Like, all these people around the world play so much money, he couldn't play. Like, what happens if you pay so much money for a ticket, Messi can't play? So you got to be respectful of that.
They've got to start thinking about his age, surely. You know what I mean? Like, how long do you think Messi's got left there?
As long as he wants, man.
I hope forever.
As long as he wants.
You know what, Wrighty? I see him playing in the World Cup in 2026.
I do as well.
Bro, no.
Yeah, I do.
How's Messi now? Is he 37 now?
He's 37 this June. So, you know, he will be
39.
He'll be coming into 40, 39, like around. Why
then he
not?
Bounces. Then he bounces. That's it. I think that's the World Cup, and then he bounces.
You don't think so?
But it's not like he's not going to be picked. If he's playing football, he'll be in there.
He's not retired from international football yet. He didn't do the Philipp Lahm and Mertesacker thing where they won the World Cup and just bounced.
No, he's not doing that.
Ronaldo's going to be playing in the Euros, right?
Yes.
I'm hearing Pepe as well.
Even if he doesn't get picked, I think Ronaldo will turn up full tracksuit. Good.
He'll have his full kit on.
Yeah, no, Ronaldo's there whether we like it or not. No, but he was rested specifically because for the Euros, I believe, right? This March International anyway, so.
Just on the ticket prices, one more thing. I think the interesting thing about that was that we see it in Europe as well. Games are category based, and when you have someone big coming to town, the tickets go up, and it's been a problem here for a long time. But it was good to see so many people push back on that. I just wanted to throw that in there just in case.
I think you asking those kinds of questions and us talking about it is important to understand that. Look, like, yes, Messi, yes, but the star player, no matter who you are, should never drive the game. It should be the fans.
It should be the fans. And the thing is, what you said, which for me is most prevalent, is, you know what I mean? Look after us, man, because we're going to be here when Messi's gone. So don't, you know what I mean? Because we're just like, okay, when Messi bounces, we'll bounce.
Exactly. And also this is something that I've spoke to people a lot about, and it's like, it's really, I don't like it, but there's this kind of really easy, sneery vibe sometimes from European fans to US soccer.
Yeah.
And I think that one thing, you know, it happened with the Columbus Crew stuff recently when they were going to change like the badge and the name and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And actually, the amount of, like, US fans don't get enough credit for actually the culture that they've built themselves.
100%.
And if you go, we've talked about this before, haven't we? If you go back and look through the US soccer archives, that goes back to like the early 1900s, late 1800s.
Mm.
And I think it's disrespecting the fans when they actually do so much good work for that league. Never disrespect fans anyway, but especially when they do so much good.
I think people need to understand, just like, look, and I'm the perfect like person to speak about this because you can't tell me shit. I've lived in Peru, grew up in England, and I've been in New York for 20 plus years. I know the US culture very well. The growth of the game in America is ridiculous.
Mm.
From a participation perspective, I don't have the full statistics, but I'm willing to bet it's the most played sport in the country.
Wow.
It's young people, because they come from so many different backgrounds, it's just growing and growing and growing and growing. And yes, the NFL remains king, and the NBA, and then college sports.
Mm.
But let me tell you something, football, soccer keeps on growing. And by the time 2026 comes, the NFL will remain king for a long time, but it is a growing machine. You go to Atlanta United, righty? Like, and it's a big game. I mean, you're talking, this is a 65,000 seater stadium.
What do you think after the World Cup, what do you think they're looking to get out of that? What's going to be the boost? What's going to happen with the MLS and American football after the World Cup that didn't happen so much in 94?
I think the infrastructure is there now that it wasn't. It's even if you go back 10, 15 years ago, it's completely unrecognizable, I think, MLS, compared to what it was. And I think that the people who have gone there over that period deserve a lot of credit. Yes, some of them went and got paid.
Yeah.
But also, a lot of people really went there to play football. I mean, like, I'd say Bradley's one of those people. Yeah, like, you know, he kind of did a hell of a lot for New York.
100%.
Like that, and the Red Bulls. And like, Thierry was there as well and stuff like that. But I think it's just MLS, and I think US soccer culture is in a much better position now than it was in after 94. And I think that they just need to continue to try and, I think, just be them. I know it sounds really cheesy, like they've got a really good league in terms of like where the franchises are based.
Yes.
They're continuing to grow. players are going there younger. You know, you're seeing like Ricky Pooch playing for LA Galaxy now. And he, a few years ago, Moose and I were like,
Barcelona,
this
bro.
Kid is going to be yeah. really good. Yeah. So,
and he's killing it there.
Yeah.
There are three things that MLS needs to do to continue to grow and American culture to continue. Number one is to be a transactional league. You can't just be somebody that brings in. Mm. You need to see people that sells out. Miguel Almirón was a perfect example. Yeah. Comes to Atlanta United, the Premier League, whatever. Alfonso Davies you know, came from MLS. So all these players. Number two is you got to make sure that access is there.
Yep.
You got to go to underprivileged communities and be like, you can play.
Yeah.
You don't have to pay or pay minimal because for a long time in America, the pay-to-play system was completely alienating.
Yeah, of course. The inner city people. So like, that's what's happening with women's football here.
Exactly. And that needs to grow in America even more. It's getting better, but it needs to grow. And then the third thing that needs to happen is to make sure that every club is representative of its own community.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds very simplistic, but because America is so huge and cities are so different, Dallas is not New York and New York is not Charlotte and Charlotte is not Toronto in Canada. So they need to make sure that they continue to create that community-driven identity. If you do all of that, San Diego is going to become the 30th team next season. Like, that's a huge soccer city. Represent and keep growing and growing and growing and it'll be fine.
I think in addition to, obviously, Casey Stoney's there at the Wave.
Yes.
And they've just won their first trophy with the NWSL Challenge Cup.
NWSL also a massive league.
Huge.
Yeah, it's big. So it's a lot of opportunities. So I think the answer to your question is like 2026 will come and more young people are going to be like, I want to play this game. Yeah. So give them the access to do it.
Before we go, I saw a tweet from Joel Golby. It said, I thought this would be a fun one to ask you both.
Go on.
Joel said, not to us, he just posted that out there. Been thinking of some fun new rules that might improve football.
Yeah.
First one is whoever wins the penalty has to take it. Unless,
I love that.
Unless they are so injured that they have to be substituted, in which case the sub has to take it with their first kick.
I love that.
Too much, bro. Right. I like the fact that the person who wins the penalty takes it. I'm sorry, the sub shouldn't have to take it. Then you should go to...
No.
No?
I think
that's too much for the guy. The first... Can you imagine you're coming up to the... So you're in the Premier League, the last game of the season, and...
No, yeah, that's too much of high stakes. I think the player takes it.
You've got a penalty taker on the bench, you could just bring him on for the penalty.
Oh, that's true. But if they don't... I think here's what happens. The player that wins the penalty takes it. If they can't take it, then the manager chooses who they take it or the team within takes it. I think... A sub, it's tricky, isn't it? What, specifically just first to come out? You haven't done anything.
No.
You haven't even warmed up. You're coming on to take the bend. That's a lot of stress.
They do it in the NFL. They bring the kicker.
Yeah, but a kicker, that's what a kicker does.
Yeah, but you know, you can just have one guy warming up with a net next for an hour.
No, but you could see where in the NFL that can work simply because the kicker is predominantly there.
Their specialty position. That's his role.
The most high-pressure position in any sport ever in the world, the NFL kickers. Because if they miss it, they bounce.
But the thing about that as well, when you talk about like the kicker, he hasn't really, apart from maybe the backup kicker as well, there's not a lot of love for that guy. He's he's almost like, you know, when they're all on the bus, he's over the back of the bus.
I know we're going off, but I think they're actually really beloved in squads because all NFL players know how important they are.
Depends how good you are, right?
Yeah,
Mason Crosby for the Green Bay Packers was a god.
Yeah.
Say that the hero villain fucking scenario in the kicker. See, you know what? He's under more pressure than anyone.
Yeah, yeah. Did he bring another rule? Did he do another rule? Did he tweet another one?
I was thinking, what rules would we bring in? So there's one famous, it's famous, like Stadio is famous. There's a thing that I tried to push on Stadio once where each penalty shootout should have, there has to be one mandatory Panenka.
Keeper has to guess which one is it going to be.
It can go any of the five, but in that five, one has to Panenka. So it's actually then plays into strategy because if you hit your first four and no one's Panenka'd it, the keeper could just stand there on the fifth because he knows it's got to be Panenka.
No, we can't do that.
But check this out. There was I forget his name, forgive me, I'll have to go back through, but there was a guy who ran the game theory on actual like game theory on the like numbers of doing that, and it got pretty deep and
did it?
Very intellectual.
You know something?
I love that. If you have to guess which one the Panenka is going to be.
I think they're all penalty related. I think in response to that, someone said if it gets to five and it gets to sudden death penalties, the managers have to take the first two.
Yeah, well, no. I want the manager to be involved one way. Do you have a rule that you would like to incorporate?
No, but like, I don't
No changes whatsoever.
No rules at all.
Yeah.
Rolling subs. You know, that'd be fun.
The rolling subs.
I'd love that.
No, I have one.
It'd be like, you know, at school where you just on the in the sports hall, everyone's just lined up on there and like, oh, right, let's roll up.
Like the NBA, just bring people when
I like a rule to change with the throw on. So if you're going to throw it more than 10, 15 yards, you can bowl it one arm. So like, you can bowl it one arm, so like the goalkeeper just throws it and it goes wham all the way. I think if it goes less than 15, 20, you can't do it. You have to throw it normally.
You just do whatever.
But you can just run it in and bowl it with one arm right over to the
but
other
then,
side.
If then players can appeal that it hasn't gone far enough. Yes. VAR gets involved.
And then you get the line that comes and it just goes under 15 yards, said no, nope, foul throw.
And you see these ridiculous one-arm throw-ins.
Gosh.
That's not a bad one.
You can do it one arm, but if you don't get it over 20 yards or however long, it's a penalty to the other side.
See, what I'm saying with Rice. He's gone again.
Now we're talking. Listen.
Listen, for the good
of the game, put me in FIFA.
And then teams specifically buy people that can just launch it.
Yeah. Nice.
Like Olympic javelin throwers will just become like on the bench just specifically for a massive, massive throw. I like it. I have one.
Go on.
It's not that unique. I mean, I've said it before and I think people have, but I really think that each manager should have a challenge.
For the rule.
Let's say, for example.
Like a challenge on tennis.
Yeah, or the NFL. Like, let's say a manager has, let's say it's Arsenal against Liverpool. Mikel Arteta has a little red flag. Mm. Jurgen Klopp has a little, and he throws it. So one each per 45 minutes. So let's say, for example, the ref says, no, there's a foul, there's a penalty, whatever. And even VAR comes in and you still disagree. You throw in that challenge. And then you ask them to be relooked at whatever. And if you're correct, you keep your challenge. But if you're wrong, you lose it.
Do you know what? In fact, you
substitute it for the VAR. Like, this is what you do.
Yeah, this is the thing, because otherwise, like, it's going to be stopping. If you actually put the responsibility on the managers to be like, actually, I want to appeal that.
Which is what happens in American sports all the time, righty? What happens is, like, they have challenges, and sometimes they don't use it or they use it wrongly, and they're like, what are you doing? What should you have done? So get rid of the VAR advice to the ref. If something happens and... Because you got the monitors there.
Yeah.
And Mikel Arteta sees something. He's like, no, there's something wrong here. Challenge. And then the ref has to go to the monitor to see what he's challenging, and then boom.
I love Mikel, but can you imagine how many fucking times that flag would be on the pitch?
Yeah, but the thing is, you can only use it once.
Mikel Arteta.
Richard Keys would be writing blogs about it.
But if you've only got one. One per half.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got two then.
Yeah.
Right? So then you could say, no.
You've got to be sensible.
Like,
and if you're correct, you keep it. So you can do it again. If you're wrong, you lose it.
Yeah, but what if it's subjective?
VAR is subjective.
Yeah, but people do it in tennis, don't they? So they're just like, oh,
so how will Mikel be right? How will Mikel be right and then the VAR people not right? Is it just because he's challenged him?
Because my thing is you get rid of the VAR advice.
Right.
You have the challenge instead. Because one of the biggest arguments we've had so far in football, specifically in the Premier League, is that why didn't VAR come in here? Or VAR coming in is adding pressure to the ref to make the wrong mistake.
I kind of think so. This might fix a lot. So actually, it's like VAR only gets involved when a manager challenges it.
And you bring back the game to simplicity. Yeah. The ref has control until the manager, who's responsible, and then fans won't get mad at the officiators because, like, your manager wanted to challenge.
I kind of don't hate that.
I have to admit, when
Luis Miguel said manager challenges, I thought he meant they have to play paper, scissors, rock. Yes. Rock, paper, scissors.
Or challenge, like, okay, let's settle this with a boxing match.
Can you imagine? It's a draw, and now... In the North London Derby, Mikel Arteta and Ange Postecoglou have to play best of three, rock, paper, scissors,
Ryan,
on the halfway line.
I'd like to officially go to my idea.
Okay.
She rolled.
Hang on. Okay, thank you very much, man. We've lost, right.
It's been too much for him.
Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much, Ryan, but thank you very much to Luis Miguel Echegaray.
Oh, you are a legend, ESPN, my friend.
I love you, ESPN, for letting him come across. You got to come back so at the end of the season to see where Villa goes so we can go from there.
Bro, I would be honored. Absolutely.
A real pleasure having you, my bro.
Yes, thank brother. You so much. Love you so much, man.
We're off next week and we'll be back the Friday after, so we'll see you then. Take it easy, everybody.